Welcome back to the podcast and what we're affectionately calling the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits.
No!
The official end of the podcast. Special episodes after the podcast is done here that will probably be on the Patreon feed only, but we're going to walk through kind of closing out Skull and Shackles content on the Patreon over the next month or so, and talking about maybe some things in the future. But this is, as always, is your former GM, as well as also your future GM, Patrick, here joining me to talk turkey. You just heard him talking turkey about the terrible traitor's tune he's created, is Tyler. Hey, Tyler.
Hi, here's your former pirate captain and your future pirate king.
Howdy, Tyler. We have now been, feels like we've been playing games together for almost a decade now. I feel like we're getting closer.
We are getting close, yeah.
To that. I feel like in maybe 9 years, but by the time Starfinder 2E comes out, it'll probably be a decade. But I was talking before we started recording tonight how this is like the sixth campaign, full campaign, we've finished together.
Yeah. Yep. Four 6-parters and 2 3-parters, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So 5 full length.
Three total. Three 6-parters, three.
No. No.
So Iron Fang is 6, Dead Sons is 6, Fate of the Fifth, which is not Attack of the Swarm is 6.
Attack of the Swarm is 6.
And Golden Shackles is 6. Yeah, and then Aeon Throne is 3. And
Devastation Arc.
The Devastation Arc is 3. Yeah. Wild. That's a lot of content. That's a lot of pages.
So I guess my first question is, are you sick of me, Tyler, yet? Are you absolutely bored with me GMing you?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, before we started this podcast, we were playing some Pathfinder First Edition, Iron Fang Invasion Online, just for fun. Can't believe I didn't record that for content, but
I can. We were ridiculous.
Shout out to our friend Brad. I came to you and the other players on this podcast, I think right at the start of the pandemic, before baby Besamara was born, I should mention. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
you and I and all of our friends had a ton of free time. And we're looking to spice up the Patreon. Yeah. Patreon content.
I was childless when this started, and I have a 3-year-old now. What?
You and your wife, a couple dinks.
The flow of time is cruel and unnatural.
Yes. How young we were way back then. But yeah, we settled on doing something I thought I would never do in like a million years as GM. Well, 2 things. 1, replaying an AP that I've already GM'd before. But 2, also converting a first edition campaign into second edition, which Pathfinder second edition had just released like that year when I thought about doing this. And well, it has been a long road. It's been a lot of work. And my second question to you is, as we're getting to past episode 200 of this podcast, mm-hmm. GMing you in a pirate campaign for up to 4 years now is, am I your best friend of all time? And how are you going to make it up to me? What are you going to do to pay me back for all this time?
Definitely best friend of all time status. And I the only thing that saves me from having to be on Patrick's speed dial as his gopher or shovel his driveway in thanks for the rest of time is the fact that we are separated by an entire country. So, I
can't call you up to fly 2,000 miles. But
I do feel like maybe one day Patrick will be like, hey, no one will GM this campaign for me. I'm calling in the favor. And I'll be like, no! And I'll have to step up and GM something for you someday. So
funny. Very rarely do I see a campaign. It's like, I would prefer to play this than GM it. It's always like, oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
I want to be those monsters or that bad guy.
I mean, that's the same for me.
I have played in a campaign that I would also love to GM, Kingmaker. I had a buddy up here who GM'd me for Kingmaker, and it was a lot of fun to kind of relax a little bit. But after the conversion of Kingmaker to second edition, I'm like, oh man. Uh-oh. After completing this podcast, I was like, oh, I could totally GM Kingmaker because I never have done it. But yeah, not anytime soon.
No,
not anytime soon.
You deserve a rest. You are Frodo at the end of Lord of the Rings. We need to whisk you
jumping
away.
On my bed. Yeah, I'm jumping. Jumping up on my bed.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, but I guess by the time this episode comes out, we'll be done with 200 episodes of the podcast, like I mentioned, which I didn't know that we would get that far. Like 200 episodes was like the first three seasons of Cosmic Crit.
Yeah.
Like back to back.
It just shows you how, I mean, in general, the Pathfinder APs are just thick. They're just dense books. Yeah. They have, you know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, in Starfinder, you have the complete freedom of space, but they're pretty confined. Whereas in a lot of the Pathfinder APs, you are in a condensed space, but they really flush out that space. And
yeah,
it's so many things that you can do.
It's interesting. They definitely feel like your Lord of the Rings style books. They are that level of in-depth, especially six book campaigns. They are so intense. Paizo has recently started doing a bunch of three book campaigns, which I think is, you know, 100 episodes would have been like so doable by comparison.
Yeah.
But yeah, 200 is a lot. And just by comparison, Starfinder is more like a TV show than it is a book series, and they just go by faster, you know, for whatever.
I think
I'm interested to see if second edition is the same with their APs, you know, like more.
I hope so. I do like the stylistic difference between the two. Mm-hmm. I think it is a fun change up. You know, I definitely don't want Starfinder to just feel like, you know, just Space Pathfinder.
Space Finder.
I like it. I hope they keep that kind of concise nature to their Starfinder APs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would like it if they allowed, you know, some more fleshing out of some of the areas in their campaigns and, you know, made room for more maybe GM expansion of like areas that seem to really grab on to whatever players are interested in, you know, kind of in whatever part of the story you're in, but it's tough.
Yeah. I would say we are playing currently like the most Pathfinder of the Starfinder adventures, which is Horizons of the Vast, which has been called Space Kingmaker, which is Pathfinder first edition. Sprawling adventure, another Kingmaker kind of. I guess we played our own Kingmaker campaign here, you and me, Tyler. But
yeah, and you know, I say it will be nice. It will be very nice to lay down Cassius's crown and focus on the crown that I have in the other show.
Yeah, you just keep becoming the leader of things, huh? Well, speaking of your character, this episode is one of many of our post-show discussions. I forget if we're having like six or seven of these, but I'm doing one-on-ones just like I did with your kind of final one-on-one episode with all the players. And yeah, we still have a few episodes to record at this point. So we are doing this like right after episode 192. So we can talk about stuff that happens in the future for us, but we will talk about the previous 192 episodes tonight. It will be weird if your character dies after we record this, but I have like 10 general questions for all the players, and we're just going to go down them a rapid fire style. And I apologize if I've changed some of these since I sent them to you, but.
Oh, no. All the ad lib.
Yeah. I hope you didn't write down answers. The first question is just talking about your two PCs, comparing them. You've had both Cassius and Kovic over the years. Cassius a lot longer, but you know, whose character did you like more, the A team or the B team? I think I know the answer, but maybe I don't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I love Cassius the most. He's my sweet baby, my rotten soldier, my right-hand man.
Sweet cheese, baby.
Cassius is just, you know, everything, all the, it's really just this like teenage pirate fantasy character that like I've always wanted to do. And, you know, whenever it was Halloween and I always would fantasize about this pirate costume that I could wear out to Ren fairs or Halloween, like I said, and you know, this is how I'd imagined it. That's Cassius is kind of what I would think of that to be. So, you know, when it came to playing these two characters, you know, I like playing Cassius more, but part of that is that Cassius is a talker and I'm a talker and I like playing charisma based characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cassius is very much fills that role. And especially as a swashbuckler, you know, he has a lot of skills. And so I was able to find a lot of creativity with him in a lot of situations, whether it be a diplomatic one or a social one, or even in combat or exploration. You know, I always felt like there was a way for Cassius to interact with the world in a kind of a fulfilling way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kovic was created precisely because of what Cassius was. Mm-hmm. I did not want to haul off and
didn't want to make another one.
Yeah, like, oh, my backup character is a bard. It's like, oh, cool. I could, you know, I didn't want to do that. But
Kovic, you should have. Bard would have been so cool, no. Tyler.
I know. It would have been so cool, but I can't keep talking like this. But Kovic was my favorite character to play in combat.
Oh yeah.
Kovic the Ranger in general, so fun, so deadly. Yeah. I mean, I just
Rangers and, are so good and
I didn't even 2E. Like yeah, and I really wanted to make this crossbow ranger, which is, you know, for if you haven't played a ranger, Kovic is so not optimized. You know, I wanted to make a very specific kind of ranger, and you know, I also took, you know, because I had this idea, you know, I put him up in the northern lands, which are very coded in Viking kind of mythology and symbology, and so I wanted to include some of that, and so, you know, I wanted him to be adept with a sword and a ranged weapon, thus the ranger choice, but I wanted it to feel more balanced. I didn't want to feel punished because like I pulled out a sword, and so I kind of kept with the crossbow theme. So
yeah,
I did like him, pretty well
balanced.
He did good stuff, you know, being able to grab the fighter dedication and do whatever it's called, power legacy was fantastic. I really enjoyed the ranger. I would love to make more rangers in the future. You know, Cassius suffered from combat simply because I was very adamant that he be a wit swashbuckler. The wit swashbuckler is just not very good, or not very good the way I built it, because of the, you know, language dependency. So, you know, it works in the Shackles because you're fighting other pirates. And so it's like, for the majority of the time, it's great. But like, I couldn't imagine having that in some of the other campaigns that Paizo has out there where you're not just fighting, you know, dudes.
Fighting tons of oozes and stuff. they don't listen to your jabs.
Yeah. And the swashbuckler is, you know, I think if you had to do that and you were mate and you chose like the fencer, or you were like, well, I just have to tumble through spaces. It's like, well, then I don't know. You're going to want repost. You're going to want AC buffs. You know, I kept Cassius at a distance because I didn't really want to have to worry about, you know, getting hit all the time. Because when you did hit me, I folded pretty fast. So, you know, crits are deadly. Crits are really deadly. They drop pretty much anybody. But
not
especially.
Really the party tank for sure.
No. I think it
made a fun dynamic because, you know, your teammates had to be the front line for their captain. You know, you weren't there leading leading them and taking the hits.
Yeah. And I think, and that's also why Kovic was so much more of a
beefy boy
warrior type cast. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. I wanted to, cause I think Kovic, you know, typically when I make fantasy characters, whether it be in Elden Ring or Baldur's Gate or something like that, that's away from a TTRPG. Mm-hmm. I make more Kovics than I do Cassius's. And so, you know, I wanted to bring that to it and really kind of have a coin with both sides. Mm-hmm. And
second question, real simple one, real quick. Don't think about it too hard, but first thing that comes to mind, do you have a favorite moment for one or both of your characters, or favorite single part of the campaign?
Well, for Cassius, I mean, it had to be that natural 20. I mean, I mean, you want to talk about
episode 191.
Yeah. The final battle. Boy. I mean, I think, yeah, my answer would have been so different if we hadn't recorded that episode, but, or if that hadn't happened, you know, cause there were a lot of great story moments. The Harrigan reveal was a really favorite moment. You know, the first time Cassius had his wings was a really fun moment, but that natural 20 was just this like beautiful culmination of story and, you know, rolling. It was just, you can't make it up. It was beautiful. Everybody's reaction to it was so great. It just, that was a, you know, and for it to be.
It was also back to back after Sharga, just natural 20.
Back to back after Sharga, the whole lead up. Come just on. This, yeah. I mean, it felt like out of a Marvel movie or out of an action adventure movie, where just this, you know, seemingly, you know, invincible boss is just getting hit over and over and over again. It's Thanos just getting punched and punched and comboed and comboed. And then you get this final shot that rings out the end of a dynasty in the shackles. And for it to happen in a pirate campaign that I wanted so bad, I mean, it was just, I couldn't have been happier.
Maybe, you know, historically, your dice rolls haven't been the best.
Yeah.
You said in the episode, it's like multiple books where you super crit, cosmic crit my boss at the very end. I'm like, well, you gotta remind me of that. I would not have minded if I had myself rolled better in the final.
You fight. Should have rolled you're better.
Just,
yeah.
You're just
you
got throwing cheated. Multiple crits all over the place. And okay, third question. Do you believe your characters get kind of happy endings? You know, where do you see them maybe further into the future than we went with the final episodes here? Is Cassius, is he on the throne a long time, or is he does he get sniped pretty early?
I think I hope he doesn't get sniped pretty early. You know, Cassius's intention would be to be on the throne, and at some point I think Cassius would have children, and I have no idea what would happen for him after that. Perhaps he would take his child and decide to sail out and show them how big the world is. Perhaps he would want to raise them to take over and continue his legacy in the shackles. But, you know, I think as he gets, the longer he stays on the throne, not that he covets his power, but he feels responsible for all these lives. Mm-hmm. And I think and even beyond that, he does become paranoid about the line of succession. You know, he knows how easily this could all unravel if the wrong person were to take his place. And so, you know, that would be something that he would kind of fret over. So I think as far out as I can, you know, see, Cassius has a happy life, and, you know, I would hope that, you know, he would be able to succeed in leaving a memory across the shackles. And perhaps as for Kovic, you know, Kovic doesn't really have a happy ending. It's because Kovic's
sadness.
Kovic's drive in the beginning and truly throughout everything is to die. He left his clan and he wanted to seek battle so that he could die in battle because he's old.
Right.
And
no end for, maybe we haven't done episodes 197 through 200 when we record this.
So maybe he does. Hopefully. Yeah. If you're listening to this and Kovac dies.
Absolutely wails on Kovac first. And there we go. That happened. But if there he does go. Live, you don't think it's happy if he just retires somewhere and
he
becomes able to not fight?
Yeah, he wouldn't. Perhaps he continues on with Alaris, or perhaps he signs up with one of the slave hunters or something along those lines. You know, maybe I think Kovac felt the closest to Honto. Maybe he seeks him out after some time. But, you know, Kovac has no desire to return home because that was never what he set out to do.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know what Kovac does, but, you know, his happiness will be death in battle. If he could line it up, although he would never say it out loud, death in a significant battle, a battle that meant something.
Right, right. Not as a character moment, but do you have a favorite moment as a player over the podcast's last 4 years, like playing the game or organizing the game, maybe behind the scenes stuff? I don't know if I have an answer to that, but I wonder if you did.
I think my single favorite moment in the campaign. Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Think for a second.
As a player and as a enjoyer of playing the game, I guess this question is just not in character, but as Tyler, we have been taken one night out of each week over the course of 4 years to get this done. Sometimes two nights a week. Once a week.
Double records. Shout out to
turn into triple records.
Ultimate time commitments. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those weeks are rough weeks, but I guess this isn't so much of a specific moment. Well, maybe there was a moment. A few moments where this happened, but I think the first particular time where we were doing this flash back and forth between A team and B team, when you really brought that idea to us of like, hey, how do you feel about a B team? That got me so excited when you like sent that message in Discord and you were like,
it was one of your guys' suggestions. I don't even think it was mine.
Oh, was it?
Okay. I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, I know. It was 2 years ago or 2+ years ago. Yeah. But the first time, you know, when somebody mentioned that and we were all very excited. I was like so in love with the idea. And then when we implemented it the first time, I was so happy with the results.
Yeah.
And I was like, we need to do this in Cosmic Crit. Like, I always want to do this because it just kept everything so fresh as a player. I think when you've been playing a character for so long, it's so easy to get stuck in a rut with that character or just to be happy with the status quo of that character and just really end up flatlining their story. When you're moving around with these two characters, I feel like you don't get as attached to the one character you have. Cause if that character dies, you kind of have this other character you're invested in. And so,
I think that was the original idea, was to have a backup character in case your character died and they just move on up to 18.
Yeah. But, and so you're willing to take more risk. And I just think there were a lot of things that I wouldn't have done with Cassius, you know, if Kovac wasn't there, just for the fear of like losing this precious little boy I had. So, you know, or fear of just, you know, like, oh, now I have to make this character I have to make a character from scratch that people are going to like, and that I want to play, you know, that pressure for, you know, if your character dies, and that was just kind of sort of gone once Kovac existed. And it was great.
Question five, did the idea you had in your head when you created Cassius come to fruition? Like, I guess, did you ever see the end of this campaign, him turning into the Pirate King, which honestly I didn't think was going to be an option until like book six. And I was like, oh, wow.
Maybe. Yeah, no. Did the idea that I had in my head for these characters come to fruition? Yeah. I mean, obviously Kovac's didn't.
Yeah, we talked about that. But what about Cassius?
But for Cassius, you know, No, I mean, my...
See, when you started the character, I honestly thought, like, if something like this was offered to you, like, all the responsibility, I thought Cassie would be like, no, thank you. No, I'm going to go continue to just be a pirate. See ya.
And that was it. I remember I actually discussed this with Rebecca. Mm-hmm. There were actually a few times in the show, like not just the end, mm-hmm. but like, you know, book five, where I thought, you know, I feel like this is, or even though I think it was after the Isle of Empty Eyes. So that was that book four?
Isle of Empty Eyes was four.
Four, yeah. Or even after four, where I thought, you know, Cassius might just get in a longboat and sail away. Like I and like, you know, maybe he would come back and wanting to explore that, but I just felt like this was beyond what Cassius, the, like you just said, beyond the responsibility that Cassius had ever wanted. And that, you know, also people were just getting way too close to Cassius.
There's definitely a dark middle chapter for Cassius there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a part where we had dark, we did have dark Cassius and
emo Cassius.
We had emo Cassius, and I, you know, I really thought hard about maybe he just dips for a book, you mm-hmm. know, maybe he goes out and does this other thing because he truly sees that, you know, his reliance and obligation to the crew, his allies, they're holding him back. They're causing him to take either risks that he shouldn't be taking or get kidnapped when he doesn't want to be kidnapped. And that there are, you know, much, much better ways for him to do this. But, you know, I decided that he should that he would stick with it, you know, because so many people at that point, you know, more and more things were rallying around his banner, and the idea of abandoning it all just didn't sit well with me as a player, even though I felt like it might be appropriate as the, for the character. So, you know, my idea for Cassius as this really free, kind of free spirited, witted character that was sort of a chaos factor in many of the things that he participated in, you know, ended up being true in the beginning. And then something that he had to cast aside in order to do what, you know, had to be done, which really put him into that, like, the, you know, the unexpected hero trope.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what should happen over the course of such a long campaign, but also, I mean, a couple of years passed over the course, well, more time passed in real life, but a couple of years passed over the course of the story, and I think it would be weird if your character didn't change or didn't grow in that amount of time.
There was a moment during the Isle of Empty Eyes arc where, you know, we are in like the basement of that castle, and a bunch of folks were mad because this ghost captain betrayed them or whatever, like, or didn't do it. And there was this moment where Cassius essentially puts everyone in their place. And it's just because they're all like, no, don't give him the thing. Don't give him the Pearl of Lagurney.
You made a deal with Bikindia Tongo, and you're like, shut up, Honto.
And I was essentially, it was just like, oh, you don't like him because when he was mean to you, get over it. Like, we're not here. We're not here to make friends. We're not here to be paladins for good. It's just like, we're here to do a specific thing. And
he did psychically torture Edderly Baines for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Edderly. I was very very unkind to Mr. Baines, as, you know, I was just like, you know, yeah, he used you. Get on. Like, who cares? Like, to the end of where he can, like, dispel the curse or whatever that was going over that whole thing. Cassius would have done it again, knowing all the same things. And for a while there, you know, that was kind of the person I wanted. I thought that, you know, Cassius might become all the way through the end of this much more jaded, hard person who could have very easily turned into his dad, Kurdak Bonefist. You know, maybe that would have been a very different ending.
But the power of friendship kept you grounded. Question six, Tyler, what was your favorite book or chapter if you want to get more specific, but do you have a favorite book of the six?
I definitely don't have a chapter, but book two. Book two is the best. It's just you sailing all over the place doing fun pirate stuff. It's after the Wormwood Mutiny, and you know,
Raiders of the Fever Sea.
Yeah, and that just sees you going to shipwrecks and going to islands, and you get a Pearl of Lagurney, and
you squib the ship, you make your own, you named the Tidebreaker there, and had some fun adventures down there.
And I love that one because you get to have fun adventures. And that was when we had the most interactions with our pirate crew, the crew. You know, I'm just going to segue right into the next question, Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
My least part of the adventure is
least that favorite.
The crew completely disappears towards the end. Like your crew of misfits, as you gain levels,
they can't fight alongside you anymore.
Do anything. Yeah. You can't keep leveling all these guys to keep up with you. And consequently, they end up just doing things in the background, which is fine and dandy. But you're not spending days and months on the ship where you're having to come up with these RP moments that just completely revolve around the culture built on the ship. The world expands. And while that's exactly what should happen, and I don't think it was necessarily a bad decision, I really, really missed just having these ridiculous moments with some of the very colorful crew members that we had.
Like Dad Murdering Jim and
the fan submitted Flotsam, Delmar, Crendo.
Yeah. Well, so that you know, you went from being just a colleague to being the captain, you know, the elusive, maybe mystical captain. And that not just you, but all of the bridge crew, all of the officers of the Tidebreaker, definitely over book two and into book three, moved from just shipmates into iconic legends, you know.
Yeah.
And that wasn't just for people off the ship. I think that was people on the ship too. So, you know, they just stopped chumming around with you and they're just growing up, Tyler.
Yeah, and like there wasn't as much like, oh, you're in port and you go to a tavern and you hear rumors and you drink and you have a contest and you tell tall tales to increase your infamy, right? That stuff was so fun, and the story has to be told, and those are the things that get sacrificed once you have to nail down the story. But it still is my least favorite thing that happened because, you know, besides being tortured in a cave. Yeah, that was my least favorite thing.
I was about to say, is book four your least favorite?
Oh my gosh, the Isle of Empty Eyes can burn.
If, like me, you had to play this campaign over again, would you make up some new characters? Would you want to do a different class or different kind of pirate style character? Do you have a third pirate you would have loved to have played?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if I had to do this again, I would still make Cassius. I mean, I wouldn't make Cassius exactly, but I would, you know, I would
be a different kind of swashbuckler.
I would be a pirate. Yeah. I think if I did it again, I would make a pirate, but maybe more along the lines of a Harrigan, like a fighter, a true, just a brawler kind of type pirate. I think, you know, maybe I would take a lot more influence from your Blackbeards and your Avery's, Henry Avery.
That's a good name.
And make a kind of a more intimidating, brooding, powerful type that surrounded himself with, you know, capable folks. But the other thing I would do differently, very specifically, which to talk about Kovic. Really quick. There was a moment with Kovic I was very happy with that we never really got to explore later, which is, I mean, he's a B-team guy. That's just what happens. But when we had to split up and Cassius went to the tower and Kovic went with Alaris to hunt down that one, one of Harrigan's old crewmates, Harrigan's old officers or something like that.
Yes. In book five.
There was a moment because Kovic is a pretty much a follower of Gorum, And there was a moment on that island where Alaris stops combat with diplomacy.
Oh, and yeah. With old Elise Grogblood.
With old Elise Grogblood, which, you know, maybe she could have been a pirate queen. Maybe she could be the consort. I don't know if we've answered that from the from when we did our 1v1.
Figure it out, Tyler. Pick
maybe Elise Grogblood is my queen consort.
Queen consort.
I like my options with Cassius, but I remember that moment and I was like, oh no, this is like a big no-no for Kovic. And so I had Kovic be, you know, very upset with Alaris. And, you know, and then we go on and stuff happens and it kind of, and I didn't really ever bring it up again. And I wish I had. I think if I had done something differently, very rarely did we have inter-team drama where, you know, folks were really not at one each other's throats, but at odds.
Yeah.
And I think it could have been a really good moment where, you know, Alaris did have to step up as a captain and either assuage the situation or just assert her position. Just like, yeah, I don't care if you like it, Kovic. Those are the orders, you know.
And I'm your captain. Yeah. Don't bully Rebecca in real life, though, because I don't know if she wants to RP that.
Too bad. That's the responsibility it comes with. How many times did I have to do that with you as Cassie?
So many.
I can't believe you didn't try to unionize and make me have to go through that again.
I think there needs to be a part of the story where you get mutinied, and that never made it into the AP.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. So that's definitely a moment, you know, that I would have loved to have played differently or had leaned into a lot harder was that moment with Kovic and Alaris. And I think, you know, overall, you know, I think Kovic was a little one note. I probably would have given him some other motivating things, but I wasn't too
happy. He did exactly what he needed to do, which is be a colorful background super pirate that helped out in a lot of combat. So I thank you for you know,
I think if we had to
taking a little bit of the limelight away from your secondary character.
Oh yeah, no problem. I think the other thing I would have been happily do differently if I didn't make a dark brooding type would be to do like a full kind of sorcerer pirate. I think that'd be very fun to make. You know, one of the things that I really liked about Cassius was how he was connected to the sea itself, and I think I would really enjoy a character that leaned really hard into that aspect as well. Anyway,
question number 9, we're almost to the end of the episode. Do you have any quick advice for listeners that want to make their own pirate PCs or similar kind of characters and have a similar world? Yeah,
anytime you're making up, so pirates are morally ambiguous. They do good things and they do bad things. And one of the things, if you're making a pirate or a bandit or a thief, anytime you're making these types, make a list of things they won't do and things that they're totally cool with and stick to that, because I guarantee you there will be some like emergent character development through that. So, you know, because obviously you should make that character do things that you yourself find not cool. Right. And this is obviously something you're going to want to discuss with the GM, your game master and stuff ahead of time, but you know, you might think that stealing or murdering somebody is not
totally
cool,
totally not,
but you might want to make a character who does think those things are acceptable. And if you're gonna do that, you know, sort of in the beginning, create your 10 commandments, as you might, for your character when it comes to like, hey, you know, you might say they will steal, but they will not steal from their friends. You know, so kind of give it a limit.
That's a good one for every.
Well, yeah, from a TTRPG, but don't steal from your other fellow players. I mean, even when I just, listeners, so you know, even in the very very early where Cassius pockets a ring of swimming, I talked about that with people off air. that was accepted as a character moment, not me just making a decision for the entire party.
A whole sticky fingers. Bell.
Yeah. Yeah. So make that list of like things they will do and things they absolutely won't do, and then try to stick with that, because it will create, typically it will create kind of a player conflict, or it'll be something that like the GM can put you in a weird moral situation regarding that, and try to stick with it, even if it feels uncomfortable, or you know your group really doesn't want your character to do that. But keep in mind, even if you're ever in a situation where your character's like, well, no, I don't want to, you know, I am not a generous character. I'm not just going to give 100 gold pieces to these people to help them rebuild their village. You know, don't stonewall the whole session or party. You know, allow them to do it if you get outvoted. And then, you know, maybe later on, you know, maybe your character just becomes sullen. Maybe they start kind of making quips because they're just being, you find other ways to express mm-hmm. their displeasure. But, you know, so that way everybody understands that, like, yeah, this character just got forced to do something they don't like. And maybe they leverage it some other way, but don't just, you know, be a bad guy. Don't be a bad player.
That's good general TT RPG advice. I like it. Okay. That brings us to the end of the episode. Final question. Just any final thoughts on characters, yourself as a player, the Skull and Shackles campaign? Do you want to give it like a rating, your time spent?
I mean, 10 out of 10. Yeah, right? Like this is, I mean, they did a great job capturing the fantasy of, you know, being a pirate. I think book one, if you yourself want to play this, if you're thinking, wow, what a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Book one's a little rough because, you know, the power fantasy of being a pirate and sailing the seas and making your fortune is immediately undercut as you are wrapped in chains and placed and press ganged into service. So like,
I was excited for you to get to that part because I was like, oh, they don't know what's coming. It feels more like, you know, a classic, you know, Treasure Island kind of adventure, that first book, because you are kind of, you know, for the most part, railroaded. You can't get off the ship. You have to do what the captain says. And
yeah, and it does not feel good. It does not feel good, especially like the way I wrote Cassius, where he was previously a captain. Oh, I read him. You know, you
stifled under those.
We 180 so hard. And, you know, so I got some whiplash with that. But, you know, I think that's important. I think, you know, one of the lessons I definitely learned is to, you know, make sure you write a background that is malleable, mm-hmm. more malleable. Don't get too caught up in the, you know, in the kind of power atmosphere you can accidentally build in your background. But no, I really loved the campaign. Obviously my, you know, I have issues with book four with the Isle of Empty Eyes, but
my favorite book.
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad book. It's just, it's
the one where you're not sailing. So
yes, it's the
all
one.
The other ones, like, you're sailing around and much
exactly.
like Starfinder. You're like, you could have like a new planet adventure every, you know, couple weeks.
And you can make a great argument for like, oh, well, what a great thing to force your like a pirate character to do. And that's what I tried to do with Cassius, is just like, oh, I just, you know, I'm sick of being on land, and, you know, I have a fever to get back out to sea and get my
starting to get a little testy. And,
yeah, the land. Kind of, it's almost like cabin fever, but reversed. I have cabin fever of being on land for this long. And so I still think it has its place in the campaign. It's just, you know, it was just not my favorite. You know, at the end of the day, I was very happy, you know, making these characters. And I think the best reward you get out of these is, you know, not making an evil pirate. I don't think I would want to play this campaign as like definitely not a chaotic evil pirate.
Oh God, I would love that. We had some people play it when we did the first edition.
Oh yeah,
through, and it was a lot of fun.
And I think, yeah, but you know, when you look at the romanticization of pirates, your One Piece, your Long John Silvers, your Treasure Islands, I mean, your Flynns, all these things, like, you know, these are your Robin Hoods. Robin Hood's essentially a pirate. You know, they all have their codes. you know, and I think that's what makes, you know, playing a pirate is so fun. And that's, you know, one thing I definitely wanted to do as Cassius is have a code of honor and at the end of the day, be one of the quote unquote good guys, but not be maybe a quote unquote good guy.
I think goodish guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm, exactly.
Goodish.
Yeah. I as far as myself as a player, you know, I was really, really happy with some of the RP stuff that I got to do as the captain. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you let me make many speeches, and
that'll happen as captain.
I definitely got much better at improv speech making.
That's good.
throughout however, you know, like you said, however many years of me having to suddenly, you know, make a speech after a battle or before a battle or at a feast or a party, you know, the whole party we had to make when, you know, it was when we had those lords in the Isle of Empty Eyes and we had to impress them. You know, I had to say a ton of things, and that was a fun little difficult interaction. And, you know, I enjoyed having kind of like the, you know, crew and you know, especially with Seth making Honto, which was such a great foil for like all the other typical pirates, you know, I just really enjoyed it. I think I wish as captain I had created more moments where Cassius was at odds with his officers, but, you know, it's okay. It worked out just fine.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I don't have much else this episode except to tell you, Tyler, it has been not just fun for you. I had a very fun time with this campaign.
I'm glad. I would have felt terrible if you were like, finally, the weight has lifted.
You know, it's interesting. We played a much more One Piece inspired kind of goofy version when we played, me and my friends in real life in first edition. And to be honest, I was a much worse GM. I feel still like I'm not a great GM, but I, like, you know, anything, I try to get better each time I do something. It really only, I could only tell this time because I've done this AP before how much better I am, but it's been a lot of fun. But it has been an honor being your GM here and on Cosmic Crit over all the many games we've played, because I do think your characters are some of my favorite on the entire podcast. You've got Crazy Miles, you've got some fun folks that Rebecca can make up, but between Edros and Cassius, I think those are two of my favorite player characters of all of TTRPGs that I've ever played in my entire life. Not just like, you know, the games you and I have played.
Yeah.
You make a lot of bombastic, larger than life pirates that are fun. And both of them go through a pretty big transformation.
Yeah.
That makes them even cooler at the end, cooler than I could have imagined.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember who I was talking to, but someone was like, you know, one of my friends here locally was just like, you know, what's one of your favorite, like, you know, gaming moments? And I was like, the Edros Saren Ray scene. Mm. It's like, it's not even close. That will all, I mean, I don't ever want to say that we will never do anything on these shows that will ever top that. But, you know, the Edros accepts becoming a Saren Ray kind of champion, that whole thing will always probably be my favorite moment that you created, for sure. So yeah, thank you.
Boy howdy, you like some pirates, don't you, Tyler? You had a big pirate on the wall behind you. Big old skeleton pirate. Are you gonna make another pirate in the future? Everyone wants to know. When we play
absolutely.
When we play Pathfinder 3rd edition.
Patrick, I am trying to get Praetir killed so I can make another pirate. I'm trying so hard.
He doesn't remember his past. What if it turns out he was a pirate all along?
Gosh, I would be so happy.
He's always been a pirate.
We'll see. I will probably always make pirates and smugglers. They are just my favorite.
Good, you better keep it up. Thank you for doing this, Tyler. Thanks for recording with me like 7 years. Listeners, thank you for listening. We're going to continue the march towards the end, the wrap up of Dead Men Roll No Crits next week with some more one-on-one convos. with the players and some altogether conversations, some big old postmortems. But that's it for this week. Thanks for playing and listening, and we'll catch you on the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits. Yahar.
Bye, everyone.
Yahar. Yahar.